What's going on, Just Goes to Show listeners? It's your co-host Ridge. We're back with another episode.
Back we are, Jack. I'm gonna not introduce myself this time. I think if you're listening to this podcast by now, you know my voice. So, same usual co-host.
Wow, savage! And you hit it with a rhyme early on. Back you are, Jack.
I didn't even really think about it that way, but yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I catch those whenever people are introing me. I always notice. You know, it's like, hey, he's in the back. It's Jack, or you know, stuff like that. So,
sure,
he's a hack.
Yeah, that one probably comes up a little bit more often.
Right. Well, gang, we're going to talk about the top and bottom ends of the table. We're going to spend a little bit more time on the bottom half of the table, just because I think every soccer podcast, every football podcast you listen to is going to be all about what's going on in the title race and are Liverpool out of it. And of course, we'll touch on some of those things quickly, but we'll spend a little bit more time at the bottom. And then some of the recent games and talking points around those. We'll quickly touch on Fantasy Premier League. And then, Chris, you're giving trivia to me this week. And then we'll come out with some predictions for the upcoming weekend. So, Chris, I guess to kick us off, we've had a little blend of games, sort of a longer game week, right? We had a bunch of games over the weekend and then some midweek fixtures as well. No European competition this week. And let's quickly knock out the top end of the table with that Liverpool loss in the Merseyside Derby.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, City and Arsenal took care of business, so Liverpool is the more interesting subject right now. It was a weird game. I mean, if you look at the expected goals, Liverpool did have, it was like 2.3 to 1.6-ish or something along those lines, so they did probably deserve to get on the score sheet, but a 2-0 loss at Everton. Saw that it was actually the first time that Liverpool have lost at Everton in the Premier League since 2010. And it comes on the heels of them losing to Palace a couple of matches ago. Two games that you would have thought that they would have been penciled in to get 3 points. And I think effectively they're out of the title race after it. I don't really know what went wrong exactly with this Liverpool team, but I think just looking at the Everton game specifically, you know, Everton had some good chances. They actually had a goal that was called for offsides earlier that was a tight one, and I think on the corner that Calvert-Lewin scored for their second goal, really, really poor effort from Trent marking him. He basically just gave Calvert-Lewin a free header. I'm not really sure if he would have done much, but there was just basically no effort to mark him. That was clearly his man. Salah was pretty quiet. Luis Diaz was probably really the only bright spot for Liverpool. He hit the post. He created a couple more opportunities for them. Darwin not really doing a whole lot. And their midfield just really got kind of outplayed in the middle of the pitch, I think. Everton were good on the counter. They would win balls and break. And I would say that they deserved the win. So it was a weird one. I mean, you don't really expect that. How long has Klopp been there? Like 8 years? One title in that time and a couple of seasons where they should have been more of a factor in that title race, and they've kind of fizzled out. I don't know if that's going to be his legacy or what his legacy at Liverpool will be, but I think for all intents and purposes right now, we can say that they pretty much don't have a chance at the title unless things go really, really crazy in the last few weeks here.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if I were to kind of try to put that loss into one of those reasons why they lost kind of categories or trying to understand a little bit more, I think that it's been the same story with Liverpool for the past couple of weeks, which is, I mean, their XG is really high and they haven't been scoring goals. And I think just watching that game back, I mean, there are so many chances, I feel like, when I'm watching Liverpool, and I feel like I'm almost numb to it as a viewer, where like Darwin's clean through on goal, smashes it right at the keeper, it comes out and everyone's like, oh, what a chance. And I'm thinking about games, and I have the same take about like Nico Jackson too, who also like is dramatically underperforming against his XG. Like, I think about games where it's like, if Palace had a chance like that, or if I'm watching Villa and Ali has a chance like that, or I'm like, oh, that's gold. Like, we should have scored there. We should be 1-0 up. And then the state of the game totally changes. Like, goals change games. Everyone knows that. So I think it's, if you know, Liverpool, they kind of made this situation when they sold off Sadio Mane. obviously Firmino got old, and I think they've done a good job like reloading their midfield with Szoboszlai, Endo, Harvey Elliott's a good player, Curtis Jones is a decent player. Like, I think they've got good options and rotation in there. And then a lot of the goal scoring responsibility falls on, you know, on that front three, and their optimal front three right now is Luis Diaz, Salah, and Darwin. And Salah's getting on a bit and not exactly firing. He's kind of gone quiet in parts of different seasons over the past few years. And Darwin's certainly not firing. And Luis Diaz was a bright spot. So it's like, I just think that's what it's come down to. Your forwards have to finish their chances if you're gonna, you know, win a title. And you look over and everyone says like Haaland isn't a great footballer, but like I think if you give him the XG chances that Darwin gets, like Haaland's scoring you a couple goals, and there's the difference.
Yeah, and I think it's worth noting that Diogo Jota got hurt at a pretty inopportune time, because he is a guy that is a good finisher. You know, it's funny, the NFL draft, recording this, the NFL draft's a couple hours away, and I've just been, I love the NFL draft, so I've just been nerding out on prospects. And Darwin is kind of one of those guys that you look at his traits and you say, like, he's big, he's fast, he's strong, he gets into good positions, like, this should work out for us. And you look at his traits more than you do his actual results on the pitch as to why he should be a good player. And mm-hmm. he's young, so there's time for him to develop the finishing. And I don't think it's – I don't know. I mean, he's got a powerful shot. I think it's more of his instincts are a little bit off. His confidence is probably lacking a little bit. But he has all the traits that should make him a really good center forward for a team like Liverpool. And the production is just not really there for him. And I think for a striker, it's really easy to lose confidence quickly. You mentioned Nicholas Jackson. Same thing with him. You know, he gets into a lot of good positions. He's got pace, and he just doesn't have that finishing trait. You know, you think about guys that have been really successful in the Premier League for a long time, like a Danny Ings, or back for Palace, like Dwight Gayle. There's certain guys that are not the most talented players out there, like Chicharito, but they're like these poachers that just, when the ball gets to them in the box and they have a clear lane to shoot, you expect them to score. And Darwin is one of those guys that he might score like a wonder goal here or there, but the ones that he should be scoring every time, he seems to lack that, I don't know, that killer instinct or finishing ability that we've seen a lot of other successful strikers have.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, if you compare Liverpool to the other, I think that draft comparison is a great one. I think, like, he's like an analytics darling, right? If you love the analytics, then Darwin's your guy.
He would kill it at the combine.
So good positions. Yeah, exactly. You kill it at the combine. But then if you compare Liverpool to, you know, to the Arsenal and City, well, City have, like I said, Erling Haaland up top, who, you know, will get you those goals. And then if you look at Arsenal, they're playing a little bit more like Liverpool in a sense, where they don't have that out and out number nine or that goal scorer or that kind of clinical up front presence. But then they also have a much stronger defense than Liverpool, right? So Liverpool concede a lot of goals. So it's like, if you're not going to finish your chances, but you're also going to concede, you know, a decent amount of goals, then you're in trouble, right? And like Arsenal kind of get away with it not having an out and out number nine because they've got the best defense in the league. Right. So, and I think back to the Liverpool team, you know, when they won the league and when they've been stronger over the past few years, you know, you need to have a strong defense when you're underperforming your XG, and they certainly didn't in this game. And it's now a two horse race, and it's really looking like, we were just talking before the pod, like it's looking like it's going to be very, very unlikely that anyone but Manchester City wins.
Yeah, and it brings, just the last note on Liverpool too, it brings us back to the classic debate that we've had on Trent Alexander-Arnold for, what, 3-4 years now, where he scores a brilliant free kick over the weekend, and then the next match he doesn't do his defensive duties and concedes the second goal. I really think if they don't give up that second one, they're creating enough chances. Once you go down 2-0 away in an atmosphere like that, it's going to be really, really hard to think you can get a result. And a draw really wouldn't have been enough for them anyway. But you're down 1-0, right? You might think you have a chance. So it's that Trent thing where it's like, man, he can do stuff that really no other fullback in the league can do. But when you ask him to do the simple things defensively, he just loses focus or doesn't have the effort, or maybe he's just not a natural defender. But when you're trying to win a title, you need guys who are going to be solid defensively. I mean, it's a set piece. It's simple. And he's just not doing his job there. So I don't know. I mean, I think that Arsenal still have a chance. You know, City have to play 5 more matches. You'd expect them to take care of them. But all they have to do is drop one of those. You know, they're right now they're down 1 point with a game in hand, so they control their own destiny. But I've been saying all season on the pod that I would pick City. I'm not going to waver from that now. But I do think that, you know, Arsenal, they're still a shot there. City has to drop one game and it gets really interesting again. So, and Arsenal are in really good form. And now both these teams don't have to worry about Europe. Obviously, that helps City too. But you mentioned Arsenal's defense. They're really, really good defensively. Their last five, they've kept four clean sheets. And the only one they didn't was their loss to Villa. They're going to play Spurs this weekend, away at Spurs in a derby. If they win that, then, you know, who knows? But yeah, right now I'd say it's a two-horse race, and obviously City would be considerable favorites, but seeing crazier stuff happen.
Yeah, for sure. Five games it's not easy to win five games on the bounce in the Premier League. I do think with the way Fulham's playing, like they'll be formidable. So City, their remaining five results are, or fixtures are, they play Forest, Wolves, Fulham, Spurs, West Ham. And so the Spurs one obviously is a little tricky. And then I think the Fulham one's a little tricky. West Ham have been really, really fizzling out. And Wolves, the depth in that squad doesn't look good right now. And who knows, Forest are at the bottom of the table. They could be kind of scrappy. So like, but you know, they are going to be considerable favorites in all of those games. So we'll see. But five in a row, even if you're the favorite in all five games, it's still difficult to get a result in all of those games.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to move towards the bottom of the table here?
Yeah, well, it's just worth highlighting. I mean, we watched Jean-Philippe Mateta score four goals in the last two games and look on fire for Crystal Palace up top. They thrashed. I was looking for the right word there. Trashed. West Ham. Yeah, trashed, walloped. Whatever you want to say. They beat West Ham over the weekend 5-2, and it was very comfortable. They were up 3-0 really early, and then that's on the back of beating Liverpool 1-0 at Anfield. They've got three straight wins, so they won away at Anfield, 5-2 at home to West Ham, and then they just beat Newcastle 2-0 at home, and the last two wins looked very, very comfortable. The one against Liverpool, you know, they had to work a little harder for. And so Palace have now kind of comfortably made their way away from the relegation zone. And I also think, like, you know, just worth calling out for us, for anyone who follows the pod, obviously, being a season ticket holder with Crystal Palace and Aston Villa and those being kind of the clubs that my family follows most closely, right now is a good time, right? Like, we got to, like, treasure that. You know, we got to, like, appreciate it when it's happening. We're like, Aston Villa have Unai Emery at the helm, who's excellent, one of the best managers in Europe. And then Ole Glasner seems to be a very, very, very good appointment. If you're buying into, you know, their form over the last three fixtures, because they have looked good since his appointment, but haven't been quite getting the results. Now the results are starting to come together. And you think now if Palace are able to hold on to some of their star players, Elise, Eze, Mitchell and now seemingly Mateta up front, if they're able to hold on to some of these guys over the summer, you think, wow, Palace could really make a run, and you'd be kind of feeling that, like, the tide is more in a Palace favor than someone who's trending in the opposite direction, right, with West Ham, and what are they going to do with David Moyes, or Newcastle, are they going to have to sell other assets, right? You kind of feel like Palace is trending in a different direction than those teams.
Yeah, definitely. I have a fun stat here for Jean-Philippe Mateta. So last three managers for Crystal Palace, he's actually been there for a while. I think this is his third season at least with the club. So under Patrick Vieira, he had 53 games played, 8 goals scored. Roy Hodgson, 39 games played, 8 goals scored. Ole Glasner, 9 games played, 8 goals scored.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I watch every Palace match. I did not believe in Mateta. I actually did a little bit before Glasner got appointed, because he was starting to really show that he could hold up play very, very well with his back to the net. And that's really valuable when you have guys like Elise and Eze on those wings who are really creative, really any good winger. When you have a center forward that can play with his back to the net and distribute from there, that's going to be valuable. And he was doing that pretty well. But now he's starting to score goals, and he's really just, you know, getting himself into good spaces and finishing every chance he gets. Major, major turnaround. A lot of credit to Glasner. Palace, too, we mentioned this in the past, but two January signings, Daniel Munoz and Adam Wharton, both have started. I think Wharton didn't start his first match. Other than that, I think they've both started every match since they've been there. Really good players, especially Adam Wharton. I'm really, really excited about. Very young center mid. And they got him on deals. Palace have done a really good job in recruitment. That's the thing. You know, they have a hard time holding on to some of these players. Like you mentioned, some of those guys could be on the move this summer, but they do a great job of recruitment. A lot of guys from the championship that they get on good deals, and then they might have to sell them down the road, but really, really fun time. I think it's two Sundays in a row that we got to watch Palace and Villa win on the same day in really commanding fashion. Some big matches, you know, Palace and they beat Liverpool, and then a big win against West Ham. Villa had that Arsenal win. So very fun time to be watching those clubs, and Palace now with three straight wins. You can say that they are definitely safe. I thought they were probably always going to be, but they're on 39 points. If we move down to Brentford, they've won two in a row. They're on 35 points. Everton, with their win against Liverpool and a 2-0 win against Forest, which we'll talk about, they're on 33. So you'd think all those teams now, they've gotten the wins they need to. They should all be safe. Everton, I mean, that would take something a lot crazier than what we were talking about at the top of the table for them to go down. So those teams just kind of took care of business.
Yeah, and that leaves us with the four teams that are going to, you know, three of the four teams that are going to go down. So three, I don't think Sheffield, I don't think Blades, I think Blades, are they actually mathematically
if they don't win this weekend, they are.
Okay. So Blades are down. We've been saying that for ages. Burnley down. Luton's on 20. I guess they're not. Burnley's
not
dead.
No, they're not. They've only lost one of their last five matches. They're 3 points behind Forest, who are currently in the safe zone.
All right, yeah. So it's a three-horse race for two spots, I guess, right? So
three-horse race for one spot to stay up, essentially.
Yeah. For two teams to go down, one to stay up. So you got Burnley on 23 points, minus 32 goal differential. Luton on 25 points, minus 28 goal differential. Forest on 26 points, minus 18 goal differential. But Forest, like we just talked about, have City this weekend, right? So if they get thumped this weekend by Manchester City, which obviously if you're a Luton or Burnley fan, you're hoping for, and who do Burnley and Luton have?
Luton have Wolves away, and Burnley have United away. Wolves, we talked about, they are really banged up right now. Major injuries. Their form is really poor. That's very, very doable for Luton to get a result there. Burnley playing United, I mean, United went down to Blades two different times in their match on Wednesday. United ended up winning 4-2. But like United also over the weekend blew a 3-0 lead to Coventry in the FA Cup semifinal. So United have shown they can play down to any competition, right? I would expect United to win that, but you never really know. So yeah, I mean, this could look a lot different after the weekend if Forest, we assume they lose, and either Luton or Burnley win their match, then things are going to be pretty, pretty crazy. I mean, this is a relegation battle that could definitely come down to the last day. And it's really because of the points deductions, too. You know, Forest, 4-point deduction, they would have 5 points clear if that wasn't the case right now.
Yeah, I guess, Chris, so if you had to choose one team out of the three to stay up, I think this is a good way into what our talking point is going to be, because I imagine we'll have the same opinion, but who do you want to stay up out of those three teams, Burnley, Luton, or Forest?
I mean, I think we both want Luton.
Right. How could you not, right? Kenilworth Road, they've scored more goals than the other two teams. They've conceded more goals than the other two teams. I've said this on the last pod, but like, I'm very curious if they stayed up with the financial gains of Luton. And then quick shout out to a good friend of mine, Ross Husband, whose grandfather, Jimmy Husband, played for Everton and Luton. He was back, actually. His grandfather just passed, was a long time Luton Everton player. And he was just back. Luton had like his family in the ground in Kenilworth before a game. And he said he met a lot of the executive directors and staff at Luton. He said they were all really sound, very small club feel, right? They like were coming up to him and having good conversations, and definitely didn't feel like, you know, black tie, kind of overly professional. So I'd love to see a team like that kind of community darling of the Premier League stay up and then spend some money in the summer. That'd be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's an awesome story for them. I've always kind of had a soft spot for Nottingham Forest, and it's starting to get less soft as events have unfolded over the last week, which we're going to talk about. If you look at the schedules, it's kind of interesting. Forest play City, tough one, but then they play Blades, Chelsea, Burnley on the last day of the season.
Yeah, that's electric. That game's gonna be electric. That's that's like in our fantasy league, the 1 and 2 players playing the last week of the season. That's electric.
Yeah, and then Luton have Wolves, Everton, West Ham, Fulham, so not too tough really. Burnley have United, Newcastle, Spurs, Forest, so that's gonna be pretty challenging for Burnley. Three tough matches, and then they get Forest at home. But, you know, if no one gets any results, Burnley would need to get like 1 point, because they're not going to have the goal differential edge over Forest to make things interesting on that final day for them. They probably need to get at least one draw in those three matches. But, yeah, that would be really, really awesome if Burnley still have a chance of staying up and they play Forest at home on the final day.
Yeah. So I guess to answer the question, Chris, so you want Luton to stay up and you'd like to see Forest go down?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't necessarily want to see Forest go down. I just want Luton to stay up. I'd probably prefer Everton to go down, but
okay. Yeah. So I'll double down on my I'm all Forest down, right? I'm like jumping on that take. I do want to see them go down. Forest fans, don't at me in the comments. Like, I think that the financial fair play and breaching sustainability rules and getting the point deduction, and then the most recent, and I don't love the appointment of Nuno Espirito Santo. I don't love sacking of Steve Cooper, and then the recent tweet that they sent out.
So let me read the tweet here. I have it pulled up. This was after the 2-0 loss to Everton. Here's the tweet from the Nottingham Forest official account. Three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. We warned the PGMOL that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. Our patience has been tested multiple times. NFFC will now consider its options. Like, what does that even mean?
It is, yeah. I picture, like, you know how they have the kind of like fat Greek owner.
Yeah.
I picture him like sitting in his he's like in the elevator waiting to get in the elevator, like down to the parking garage, out of the ground, and he's fuming, and he's like typing it on his phone as he's going down the elevator, and then as he like gets in his limo or gets in his car, just fires off send. Like, he's got access to the Twitter account on his phone and just fires that off, like, hot take. And then the admin of the Forest account is like, oh no, what's happened? Like, the head of social media at Forest is like, oh god.
That's
how I picture it happening.
It's so childish, and like, it comes off so poorly for the club, but it really does seem like they kind of like thought out the wording of it. It didn't seem like it was just like a spur of the moment, we're gonna fire off this tweet. Like, the formatting of it makes it seem like we're like, all right, we need to put something out on Twitter, and then they had a couple of people like get eyes on it. The way that they worded it, I mean, it's, and there's like hyphens in here, there's spaces between like the little sentences, and it just seems like they're like, yeah, this is what we're going to do. We're going to put out this tweet. Like, what? NFFC will now consider its options. What options? That's what kills me.
Right.
What options
do you have?
Like, oh, we're going to leave the league?
Yeah, exactly. What? Yeah. What options do you have? You file a legal complaint against the referee?
Because you say he's a Luton fan?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're going to prove that he's a Luton fan. He had biases. Like, in what world does anything change? Like, it sucks. It's sports. Calls go against you. I watched the game back. Like, yeah, Ashley Young probably fouled him. Is it insane that it wasn't called? No.
So, like, you know, there were three calls, all against Ashley Young. The first one, not a penalty for me. Second one, absolutely not a penalty. Third one, probably could have been called. But I wouldn't say it was like the worst call of the season. I would say like, you could have given a penalty there.
Like, if you're thinking about worst call of the season, you definitely have to go back to the VAR of Liverpool against Spurs when they were called for offsides and the lines were drawn on the wrong defender. I think Spurs scored and were offsides and the lines.
I think it went against Liverpool, and, if I remember. I don't know. That was the last time. That was the last time they released the audio from the VAR conversation to the public, and now Forest are going to hear the audio. They're going to have basically a meeting here, which they are entitled to hear the audio. Like that's like written in that they can do that. But they also requested that it gets released to the public. And it sounds like that's not going to happen. That's only been happened one time this season, but I don't know what they're expecting to find. I saw some really funny tweets like about people doing voiceovers on the audio and just like pretending that they like hate Forest and like, oh wait, it's a Forest badge. No. Yeah. Don't give it. Like, what do they think the audio is going to be? It's not like there was the one call, the offsides call, that was blatantly wrong. Like, they just got that call flat out wrong. These are all judgment calls in this. And like I said, two of them I would have thought are never penalties for me. And the third one, maybe. It's insane.
The added wrinkle is something you and I've talked about, but for everyone listening to the pod, is that Nottingham Forest, to our knowledge, are the only team in the Premier League and perhaps in world football to have to employ a former referee as an officiating expert, right? A match or performance analyst. So they have a former referee, Mark Clattenburg, very famously was, shout out to our trivia question from a couple weeks ago, very, very famously was a referee in England for a couple decades, right? I think like 20 plus years. And he now works for Nottingham Forest, and he has some role where he's a match and performance analyst, and he's supposedly employed to like analyze or provide some sort of data, context, or, you know, information value around the referees who are reffing the Nottingham Forest games. So the added wrinkle is Forest, they tweet this thing pointing out to the world that they think that they're getting screwed by the refs. And then they're the only team to employ a previous referee on their staff. So that's kind of a weird look, right? Like, they're very focused on the refereeing portion of the game, right?
Yeah, I want to ask you something that kind of just came to mind for me. So Mark Clattenburg, he's their match and performance analyst. What do you think, from a club perspective, is the advantage of employing a former referee to try to improve the results of your football club?
Yeah, I've actually thought a lot about this because when it first came out, I think we mentioned on the pod like a couple months ago when they first started. I think it was around January or maybe February when he got the job there. So it wasn't like they had him at the beginning of the season. And I think that in looking at the refereeing table, there are definitely refs who are more like yellow card happy, right, than other refs, right? So, I don't think there's a ton to gain. Like, Mark Clattenburg's job, like, I don't know how much he's being paid. Whatever it is, he's definitely overpaid. I think there maybe is a sliver of value to say to the team or in your match report to say, this referee is reffing our game. He has a tendency to award a sliding challenge with a red card rather than a yellow, right? Or he has a tendency to award more yellow cards than other referees. And if your players know that, they can... And how much does it influence the match?
I guess
are very hard to say. Maybe very little. But that's like, I do think that would be maybe slightly helpful if I was a player to know that. Like, oh, two-footed with this guy gets he sent off.
That
might be helpful to know.
I don't disagree with that knowledge being helpful potentially. But why does Mark Clattenburg have more expertise on that than anybody? Like, that's all public information. You can go back and watch replays of these refs doing matches. We saw, you can look at all the yellow cards, the red cards they give out, the penalties they give out. All this data is available to the public, so the club should have plenty of access to any information they might need on that. right? So it's not like, oh, Mark Clattenburg, oh yeah, 8 years ago I reffed against this guy and he called this call, so look out for that. You know, like, that doesn't do anything. It makes it seem like if you're going to hire a guy like Mark Clattenburg to try to improve your side, it's to try to take advantage of maybe holes in the system or things that the refs might not see, or, you know what I mean? It's like, it almost seems like a, like they're going to try to like take advantage of referees. Like Mark Clattenburg's going to be like, this guy, here are the weaknesses in the officiating. We might be able to like, it just doesn't come off as like a very genuine or respectable strategy.
Yeah, it's definitely not sporting like ethic. It's not, doesn't sound like, it doesn't feel ethical.
Right. It's not like they're hiring Mark Clattenburg to be like, we can play by the rules better.
Right, right. I agree with you. It is all public information. And so thinking about it through your lens is like, well, why him? You're right. It does give you sort of like, I don't know, it's like a retired police officer who's now like a private investigator in their community. And it's like, oh, hire him because he has all these connections back from when he was in the force, right? And he's got people he can text and talk to like get things done.
Now he's like, freed up because he doesn't have to play by all the rules of the law enforcement or something. Like,
yeah, exactly, right? Like, it's super interesting. Like I wonder if they thought, oh yeah, if we hire Mark, like Mark's gonna text his mates and be like, oh yeah, we got a big match this weekend, right? Like, you guys got any lowdown or like what's the beat, you know, in the referee's room? And they're like, what are you talking about? I don't know.
It's also,
no, that's kind of the vibe it gives me.
It's also worth noting that Mark Clattenburg is a total twat and always has been. And that's like not just because of this Forrest thing. Like, he's always been the referee I've known as being a twat, you know? I want to read a couple of comments. I have a lot of quotes here, but I'm not going to read all of them. From Gary Neville. This is on the Stick to Football podcast, just to give them credit for this. But he had a couple of quotes, because there's been a lot of former English players, like Roy Keane has some major issues with Mark Clattenburg. A lot of guys have relationships with him from playing in the Premier League, playing for England, all of that. And I think these are relevant to kind of show that this isn't really helpful for Forrest. So here's two quotes. You've got Clattenburg almost like a Navy SEAL in the director's box, bear crawling along trying to get to the CEO. The reason I asked him to resign, apparently Neville asked him to resign, was because if he actually saw the Luton tweet that went out, he actually has to distance himself from it, or he's got to be a part of it. If he's a part of that, I'm like, wow. And then here's the other quote that I think is really, really good. The manager's talking about referees. They're all consumed about referees, and they've given themselves an excuse of, everyone's against us. It's not working for them, the strategy of the way in which it's going. That, and like basically saying they need to switch their mentality and forget about refs. Like, I think bringing in a guy like this is only going to make people more inclined to complain about decisions going against them. And that's not going to win you games. It's just not.
Yeah. Well, it's just about, it's almost like, there's a fine line in the psychology of sport. You have to operate like you have total control of the outcome of the game, right? Like, that's how the way managers speak to their players, right? Like, if we play our hardest, we will win. If we execute our game plan, we will win. And once you kind of make the refereeing variable, which it's supposed to be you versus opponent, but once you make it like a three variable equation, like we're against the referees and we're against the opponent and the referees. And then there's this other element of things that you can't control, right? Like in sports, you know, team A against team B, right? Like, and you need to do better than them to win. And I think that's what the psychology that Gary Neville's hinting at here is, if you have this, you know, mentality of like, oh, this is the refs or this ref, you know, if that's kind of your out, right? Rather than pointing at you're team A against team B and they beat you in these areas, right? If you're then kind of using this other third variable as like the out all the time, right? They're like, well, what's that going to end up happening is the other team's going to end up just continuing to beat you, right? Because you get too focused on that third variable.
And
which you can't change.
Right. And here's the thing that really gets me because that's a good point. And this thing, this is what really grinds my gears when it comes to their mentality. In their tweet, we warned the PGMLO that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. So their team is going into this match thinking this VAR official is a Luton fan. We're going to get screwed. Right. Like, they already have that mindset of, we tried to get this ref changed before the game, so no calls are going our way. And then what happens? They have three penalty decisions that don't go their way. But that's going to leak through to the players. Like, the players are going to know if you as a club are going to the officials and saying, we need to change this official before the game. And that's such a bad mindset or mentality for your squad to go into a match with, being like, hey, this VAR guy, he wants Luton to stay up, so we're going to get screwed left and right all game.
Yeah, I don't know if you saw Nico Williams's post-game comments. He's saying, oh yeah, clear penalties, like the clear penalties, that's why we lost the match, right? And I actually watched a few other, I caught some like Nottingham Forest clips because I'm, you know, deep in the footballing world of social media, and so I end up with just like getting different club YouTube their videos and stuff get on my feeds. But I watched a little clip, and it was Nico Williams and Ryan Yates, and they were just talking about like they and this is where the narrative is with Nuno Espirito Santo. It was like, oh yeah, the performances lately have been actually really good, but we're just not getting the results, right? So now, like, the psychology, like Nuno Espirito Santo is telling this story of like, you guys are doing everything I'm telling you to do, so the performances are way better, but now we're not getting the results, right? And so Nuno's like, okay, well, we're controlling everything we can, we're doing everything we can, but the results aren't happening. And then it's like, okay, so then why aren't the results happening? The players are now naturally going towards, well, yeah, it's just the referees, right? And not to get like too on the realm of like psychology and mindset, but that's just a fixed mindset from Nuno, right? That's not a total growth mindset. He's like he's assuming that, oh yeah, we've done everything we can, but we're just not getting the results. Whereas if you talk to a Pep Guardiola, or you talk to, you know, Pep would say, here's X, Y, and Z that we could do more of in our game plan, right? We could have more options to bring off the bench. We could have made this ball better, you know, in the middle. We could have gained more control in the middle of the pitch. We could have defended this better or that better, right? Like, and that's why, part of the reason why I don't like the Nuno Espirito Santo hire is because I saw him do this at Wolves and then in his appointment in Saudi Arabia. It's like, he kind of tells this narrative, and if he ends up getting some results when it's like, oh, we're doing all these things right, then he looks really good. Then the players trust him, right? And that kind of, they kind of got some momentum under that at Wolves. But it's very fixed. It's like getting your team to a fixed place, to this place. Then once that happens, results should come, and they're not coming, right? And it's like, well, Nuno, turns out it's just because your team's not that good, and you guys actually don't really play that well either, right? They have some decent individual quality in that team, but compared to any squad in the Premier League team, they're not a top 14 squad in the Premier League at all, right? Nowhere near it. It's just, so it's just like not really shocking that they're in this spot, and then the players, you're right, that the mentality has kind of affected the players from what they've been talking about.
It's just such a lame victim mentality. It's so soft. It's got to stem from ownership, from the manager, and it's just permeated throughout the whole squad. And then the fans go with that too, you know? And we saw it on Twitter all weekend that all the Forest fans are like, yeah, you're right, it is the refs. And you know what? That's what fans do, but that's not what the owner and the manager should be doing.
Right.
It's unbelievable, really. I mean, I know we talked about it for a while, but I think it was worth talking about because I've never seen anything like this really at any, I don't know about like in any American sport either, where a club is putting out an official statement like threatening the league if results don't go their way and calls don't go their ways. That's essentially what they're doing. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it'd be pretty unreal if that happened like in the NFL, right? Like the Raiders lose a game and like Al Davis just pops off and is like,
I mean, it was like the NFL. The Chiefs kind of did that against the Bills when they had that offside call that was clearly offside on a really cool result. But I think things matter a little bit more when relegation's involved, right? Because this could taint the club for so long if they don't get these results. But it's also like, yo, dude, you're complaining. You lost 2-0 to Everton. They suck. Like, figure it out. You know, you're not going to get three penalties that all go your way and win 3-2 in that game. You're just never going to get that. Never.
Right. Yeah, even if they get one of those calls, they still lose, of course.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Let's move on.
Let's move on. Well, I guess quickly on the FPL check-in, this upcoming weekend, just remember you've got a double game week for Chelsea and Spurs. So Spurs had a blank game week. They were the only team in the league that didn't play. And they now have two games in hand against Aston Villa, but Aston Villa are 6 points ahead of them. So we'll talk a little bit more probably on next week's pod about the race for fourth place now that the English-European coefficients aren't looking so hot. That's really all I had for the FPL check-in, Chris, if you want to jump to trivia.
Okay, yeah. So trivia, we're going to talk a little bit more FPL. And I really I didn't plan this because I started planning trivia before this Man City game. But I figured you probably weren't going to want to talk a lot of FPL after that Man City game. Didn't go your way. I will now be moving up to third in the table ahead of Jack after this week. So no big deal. Jack got screwed by Foden and De Bruyne. But this is going to be an FPL-themed trivia. I expect you to do quite well on this one. I'm not going to give you a ton of time because I don't think it's very hard. And I want to see how close you can get. The reason why I think you should have a lot riding on this because your Twitter handle is RidgeFPL. So this is the kind of stuff that you should know, like the back of your hand. Very simple question. I'm going to give you 75 seconds just because of the amount of names. I think 60 would be a little unfair. I think you'll probably be able to get 9 or 10 of them. If you get all of them, very impressed. But I'm going to give you 75 seconds, and I want you to name the top FPL point scorers at each position, the top three from goalkeeper, defender, midfielder, and forward so far this season. 75 seconds on the clock. Time starts now.
Okay. Goalkeeper Leno.
Yep.
And Pickford. And, yes. And don't know. I'm skipping. Defenders. I got White.
Mm-hmm.
Saliba.
Yep.
Gabriel.
Yep. All three Arsenal.
Midfield. You've got Salah.
No.
Palmer.
Yes.
Up top, you've got Haaland and Watkins.
Yep.
You're at 8. Up top, then also Solanke.
Yep, that's all the forwards.
And then midfield with Palmer, Foden.
Yes.
And who's the third? Son?
No, you're missing one midfielder, one defender, or one goalkeeper. You have 20 seconds.
Saka?
Yes.
Okay. And then goalkeeper is Dubravka? No, that's definitely not it. No, Neto? 10 seconds.
No.
Is it Ederson?
No. Nope.
Is it
3, 2,
hold
1.
On.
Time. Oh. 75 seconds
Who
was
is
good.
It's David Raya. Hold on. Jose. Oh, it's David Raya. It's Arsenal as well.
Yeah. 11 out of 12, though.
All right.
I did think the goalkeepers were definitely the hardest position.
Yeah, I was going to say. I would have taken me ages to guess him, to be fair. I would have gone like Jose Sa. I was with those kind of mid-table goalies.
Going more for saves and clean sheets. Who do you who do you think the top three are in order at any position?
Of total points for the season?
Yep.
I would say Watkins, Foden, and it's either Ben White or Palmer. Probably Ben White.
No. Ben White is the top defender. Watkins is the top overall and the top forward. Second place is Palmer.
Oh, wow.
And then third place is Saka.
Wow. See, Saka had that run. I guess he's just some recency bias there. He had that run.
He's pretty consistent. He gets a lot of like 6 to 8 pointers, I feel like.
Yeah, he had that run January, February, January, February, where he was money.
Yeah, I had to update this because Salah was the third place midfielder until today. Foden passed him.
Right. Who would captain Salah? He's trash.
Yeah, but I thought it was fun because you have Arsenal, you have Raya as the second top goalkeeper, and then White, Saliba, Gabriel, all Arsenal defenders there. Noticeably, no Liverpool players in the top three at any position. You have two players from Man City. You have four from Arsenal, excuse me. Yeah. And then every other player, there's only one from each club.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, pretty spread out except for that Arsenal defense.
Right.
Arsenal have five players in the top 12.
Yeah, yeah, we're talking, and that's partially because of, which is, mainly because of the lack of rotation, right? Like they play, you know, the same 11, like the players we just mentioned, Raya, Ben White, and Saliba play every game for them.
They haven't had a lot of injury issues. They really haven't had many injury issues, except for Saka limping off from every game when he gets subbed off for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal fans would say, like, they've, like, Jesus been injured for a little bit.
He stinks.
Zinchenko, they had Jurrien Timber get injured early in the season. But, yeah, I mean, compared to some other teams.
And their core defenders, Rice, Saka, like, Martinelli maybe banged up a little bit. Like, they've been pretty healthy overall. Havertz has been fine. So, the defenders, though, is the key there. And White, Saliba, and Gabriel all start every match, and they've all been fine all season, basically, so.
Yeah, well, good trivia, Chris. I'm 11 out of 12. I can sleep well. I can sleep well at night knowing that David Raya was the only one I didn't get.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that hard, but I thought it was kind of a fun one. As we get towards the end of the season here, kind of looking back on some FPL stuff. I know we mentioned I'm excited to. I've been thinking a lot watching these matches about doing some end of season awards, and I've been excited to kind of ponder that and come up with it. So that'll be a fun one when the season concludes. But I don't think there'll be too much more movement on the FPL front there. I think most of those guys should stay in the top. But Ollie Watkins, top point getter of the season, which is so sick. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. He's got to be – it came up in my family group text this week. He's got to be player of the year candidate and favorite.
I don't think favorite. I think candidate.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. Chelsea can't finish ninth, and Cole Palmer can't beat Ollie Watkins. Like, that would be insane.
Yeah, I don't think it. I think the favorite is, if City win, I think it's going to be Phil Foden.
Fair. After the performance today, that's fair. I didn't watch the game live. I just watched the fantasy updates sink me. So, but yeah, I think Foden's unbelievable, and it sets it up for what a great summer it's going to be with the Euros.
Yeah, we're gonna have a lot. I didn't actually think about that. The pod is gonna have some strong episodes during the Euros too this summer. That'll be fun. I love the Euros.
Yeah, same. Well, let's look ahead to this weekend's fixtures a little bit more immediate, Chris. We've got Everton and Brentford this weekend. Who do you like on that one?
I mean, yeah, both teams coming off of two recent wins. I guess when I was picking these ones out, it seemed like a relegation scrap, and now we just kind of talked about how it's not really anymore. So maybe we could have picked a better one here, but. Brentford have two straight wins, but they are against Luton and Blades. So mm-hmm. I kind of like Everton to ride the momentum. They had that 6-0 loss to Chelsea. Other than that, they've won three out of the last four with three clean sheets. I will go 1-0 Everton.
All right. Yeah, fair play. I think it's not going to be a lot of goals in this game. So Everton have been on a high lately, but I think I'm gonna go 0-0.
Yeah, this is. I would say don't watch this one. I mean, it's a standalone. It's at 12:30 on Saturday Eastern, so it's gonna be by itself. But if you like want to go out and do some shopping or something on Saturday afternoon, like this game's missable. Just get back for the 3 p.m. game between Villa and Chelsea, which is our next one.
Yeah, this game's gonna be electric. Chelsea actually took it to Villa last time they played at Villa Park. I think this Chelsea team is a little bit difficult for Unai to play against. So I like Villa to win and Nico Jackson to miss a bunch of chances. Let's go 1-0 Villa.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that the home advantage is going to do it for Villa here. But I don't like 1-0. I think there will be goals. Palmer, I assume, should be back. He was sick, it sounded like, right? That's why I missed this last game. Yeah. So I think he'll be back. I'm going to go 3-2 Villa. I expect this one to be pretty exciting.
Wow, there you go. 3-2, I had 1-0. Actually, I hate my prediction. I'm going to go 2-0. 2-1. Changing.
Okay. Yeah, you heard me and you're 2-1. Like, wait, that sounds smart.
Yeah, well, I just started thinking about all the goals that both of these two teams score, and yeah, 2-1. And then lastly, North London Derby, Chris, Spurs, Arsenal. Who do you like in this one?
It's tough. Spurs should be pretty well rested, you would think. They're not in awesome form, though. They just got walloped, as we say, by Newcastle in their last match. But that's going to be about 2 weeks. It'll be over 2 weeks between matches here. I think Arsenal are really finding some form right now. They're playing really well defensively. I think they're going to win this one. I think Spurs will put up a little bit of a fight. We'll go 2-1 Arsenal.
Yeah, I like 2-1 Arsenal as well, Chris, but not to steal your prediction, I'm going to say...
You can do it.
No, I'm going to say
that...
Then
we can both be wrong.
well, I'm going to say that Spurs... So, like, Everton just screwed and ended Liverpool's title hopes. You have the opportunity for something very similar here for Spurs to do to Arsenal. So I'm going to say 2-2 draw.
Ooh, that would be quite the narrative. I like that. I kind of want that to happen now because that'd be really, really entertaining and an interesting narrative. But I do think Arsenal will win.
All right. Well, there you go. Well, as always, gang, you know, we'll be recording next week. We appreciate everybody listening.
Wait,
quick
will we?
Here if we will. Will we? That's a good question.
Jack will be traveling next week. So, yeah, TBD on that. Maybe we'll get a Brentford supporter, Jack, to chime in.
Maybe that would be unreal. He who must not be named. Just a quick plug, if you're listening on wherever you get your podcasts, if you guys can jump in, give us leave us a review. It helps more people find the pod. And of course, if you can like the podcast as well on wherever you listen, so Spotify, Apple Music, whatever that is, any of the reviews and likes and following the pod really helps us. But outside of that, Chris, that's all I got. How about you?
Nothing else over here, Jack.
All right. Well, as always, gang, thanks for listening. Just goes to show.
Everybody's human. Thanks, guys.